Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic family raising five kids outside of Boston, sharing the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, our adventures near and far, making sense of the world, and experiencing the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
And you know, other couples who do podcasts, they read the intro together, you know, like they alternate sentences.
Yeah, that's really cheesy. Sorry, but it's just...
Melanie, what do you really think?
Oops.
I am not editing that out. I'm throwing you under the bus. So, anyway, that's an auspicious beginning. All right, so I have some mea culpas I need to do issue here at the beginning. So last time I recommended a new show on Netflix called Another Life. It's a sci-fi show starring Katie Sackhoff, who was Starbuck in the rebooted Battlestar Galactica. And it was good. Like I had watched up to the episode 7 and I'm like, okay, so, you know, it's nothing worse than what you'd see on, you know, primetime network television. You know, it was good, a little cheesy, a little bonkers, kind of some of the setups were crazy. And then episode 8 comes along and oh my gosh. No, I'm sorry if you started watching that, but starting at episode 8, like, I think it goes to 10 or something like that. It got a little crazy. So, I apologize for that. I can no longer recommend that show. It got explicit. So no, I won't go into too much about why, but you use your imagination. Also, I do actually want to apologize for the poor audio quality last week, and hopefully this week's audio is better. I think I know why it was poor. There's trouble with having two people recording next to each other and the bleed over through mics, and I have special software that takes care of that. And I think I messed something up. So hopefully this week is better, and you're enjoying this. And if not, I'm working on it. So those are my two mea culpas out of the gate. And all right, so let's talk about what we've been doing the last week. So. Of course, the big thing that's happened this last week is Melanie's birthday was last Friday. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Again. So you got the introvert mom's birthday party, which is?
So your mom has a habit of taking the kids out for their birthday. I think we talked about that with Ben's birthday recently. And you were joking that she could, you know, take me out for breakfast and I said, but that is a good idea. Actually, maybe I should go out for breakfast. So it was more like brunch by the time I
you went out for breakfast,
moseyed out the door
alone
by myself, all by myself.
Yes. Which is the you don't get to do very often.
Yeah, it was nice. I went to the little coffee shop that we go to a lot. I contemplated going to someplace that I'd never been before. This bakery that's not too far, but the bakery is in a strip mall as opposed to the coffee shop, which is right on the water, like it's on the marina. And I just had to go to Red Eye Roasters, and
which is also our favorite coffee shop.
It was really good.
Yeah,
I got all the stuff that I don't normally get because, you know,
kids.
So I got myself a really nice tomato pesto quiche and a bunch of different flavored macarons and a nice iced coffee. And I sat and I read some poetry and I watched the people and then I walked along the pier and it was good.
Nice. I have to say, from my childhood, whenever someone says macaron, I think of that really too sweet coconut thing.
Macaron. Yeah. Macaron and macaron
are two different things with the same name.
Well, they're not unrelated.
Yes.
But yeah, they're both cookies. They both use a nut flour. Macaroons usually use coconut. Yes. And macarons usually use almond flour.
There, as far as taste goes, they're a world of difference. That's for sure.
Yeah.
I do not like coconut generally as a rule in sweets. That's not my thing, but you know, so, but the macaron, I'm intrigued.
They're really, really good. I highly recommend them. I got the chocolate hazelnut one and a lavender lemon, which was a little bit too strong on the lavender. I like lavender lemon, but this was a little bit too hit you over the head with the lavender. And then I got an Earl Grey, which was amazing. That was my favorite.
Not Earl Grey hot, just Earl Grey.
Just the Earl Grey.
So nice.
Although it might have been good with a cup of Earl Grey.
Good. That's nice. I mean, it's. I know, like, we've done this a few times. When it's your birthday, as much as I can, I like to give you the day out where you can go out and spend the day by yourself doing your thing without kids or husband having to, you know, feed people, take care of their needs, etc. So it's nice. So, but you also had, because it was your birthday, you had to renew your driver's license.
Yeah, it was that year. And it was the year of not only did I have to renew my driver's license, but I actually had to go to the RMV because I needed a new photo.
So in case you haven't renewed your driver's license lately, and I think it's the same in all states, there's this new thing called Real ID. It's a federal law that requires you state in order to fly.
Domestically,
you need to have a federally qualified real ID, which means it means they have to take extra steps to ensure that it's you and you it's not a fake license or whatever.
It's a much, much higher standard of documentation. So in order to get the real ID, you have to have like four different forms of ID, whereas opposed to the driver's license, you have to have like one other form of ID.
Right.
Although, as I discovered, they've actually increased the standards for just the regular driver's license. It used to be all you had to have was your old driver's license. Now you have to have your birth certificate as well as your driver's license.
If you're not renewing online?
I
think if you're doing it in person?
Yeah, well.
Right.
So, yeah, in Massachusetts, you don't have to renew in person.
Unless you need a new photo.
Unless you need a new photo, which is every, like, 5 years?
I think it's
years?
5 or 10.
Something like that.
I look exactly the same in my photo, so I haven't changed much.
It doesn't matter. You still have to
go. No, I know, yeah.
And the eye test. I think that's the other thing.
Oh, yeah, they make sure you can still see.
Yeah.
And, well, that's the thing. So, we looked at the paperwork about a week before it was due. And so a lot of the paperwork, we're like scrambling to find, because of course you weren't born in this state, you were born in Texas. And so we have to get the Texas birth certificate. And is this going to be sufficient? It doesn't exactly look like they describe it should with the raised seal.
Right. The terminology was a little bit confusing because it said it had to be a birth certificate with a raised seal. And what I have from the state of Texas is a little piece of paper that's about this, a little bit bigger than the size of an ID card. And it's like fancy paper and stuff, but it's really small. And it doesn't look to me like it's got a raised seal, but the lady at the RMV said it was fine.
Well, and that's so when it came down to it, we didn't have all the paperwork we needed in order for you to get a real ID, that you could get the standard ID, but you couldn't get the real ID. But we thought, oh, no, what are we going to do? What if you have to travel, you know, now? Well, it turns out we saw that the deadline for the real ID is October 1st, 2020. So we have a year. And if you don't have a state issued driver's license that qualifies as a real ID, you can get your passport. If you get a U.S. passport, that will qualify as a real ID. And you can also get an ID card that goes with your passport, so that you don't have to carry your passport around. You can just carry the federal ID card. So long story short, we decided go with the standard ID, and we're going to try to get everyone in our family to get passports. My passport expires in a year or two. I went to Spain in 2011. So I think I've got some time left on my passport, but we need to get going on that. And we have to get replacement social security card. Wait, did you find your social security card?
I did actually. After I got back from the RMV, I did find my social security card in the folder where it was supposed to be.
Oh yeah. Well, I haven't had a social security card in 30 years. My mom lost it when I was,
your mom.
Well, no, it was when I was applying for college. We couldn't find it. And then we ended up accidentally using my sister's number for my social security number instead of mine. This is back in the day when that could happen. And so for a while, our information was all messed up, combined. That was a mess for 5 or 6, 7 years. So what I have to get, and of course, getting a replacement social security number requires jumping through hoops and proving who you are and all that other baloney. I mean, just everything is a lot harder than it used to be, which I mean, I get why, but it's just hard. And one of the things that came up was, as a housewife who doesn't, you know, you don't work outside the home.
So I don't have a W-2 form.
Right.
And I don't have, when we moved, it was just really easier to get the bills set up in your name. Because I was pregnant and watching after 2 kids, and you had more free time and energy to deal with setting up the utility. So,
and I do all the finances anyway. Right.
And in our old apartment, a lot of the stuff was in my name, like our phone. But then we got rid of our landline.
Well, it was in your name because it was your apartment before we got married and I moved in. So right. We didn't change the utilities there. And then the house, the mortgage is actually in my name and your dad's name because your dad co-signed the loan for us back when we first bought the house ages ago. And changing that is a huge deal, apparently. So your name isn't on anything. And I've tried to get your name onto stuff, but the electric company says, oh, no, it can only be one name on it. I still don't get that. And then we don't have a phone bill. You know, we have a cable bill. I suppose we could put that in your name. But, you know, but the water bill and the sewer bill to the town, that's the same as the mortgage. You know, it's just it's so bizarre. Like, you don't exist. Like, if you know,
you're not a real person.
No kidding. I mean, it's like if you don't have a like a job with a paycheck, you're not anything. I mean, it's just, it's crazy. The world is biased against housewives now. It's crazy. So it's hard. It's harder. And I don't know, maybe we should get you like a part time job that like an hour a week just so you have a W-2 or something. I don't know. It's really weird. So I am not looking forward to doing the real ID thing when that comes up. It's just a hassle. At least the RMV, or that was, you know, we call it RMV. Other states call it DMV. That we call it the registry, is not as bad as it used to be.
I have to say that both of the ladies I talked to defied the stereotypes. They were very pleasant, very helpful, fun to talk to. There was a very long line, though. I went on a Monday morning, but I didn't get there early.
At the very end of the month.
Yeah. And so it was like a 2-hour wait.
Yeah. Well, that's not bad. Like back in the day, I remember like when you had to go to the registry and you had to go every time you needed to renew your license. Like you had to go. There's no online. It was like an all day thing. You just settled in. This is what I'm going to be doing today. I'm going to the registry. It was crazy.
I can't even imagine.
And there was like three Texas times as never. Many RMV offices as there is now.
I don't remember it ever being that crazy in Texas.
Well, yeah, you probably have less bureaucracy in Texas, right, or something, but it was crazy.
But I have to say, even though I was there for 2 hours and it was draining, I came home and I didn't want to do anything. I kind of enjoy being there. Like, I like people watching, and I think I heard like 5 different languages. There were people from all sorts of, you know, cultural backgrounds, and, you know, old people, young people. There were several babies. I was like drooling over the babies. Some little old ladies who, you know, I got to help a little bit, and it was kind of fun. But here's the thing. I had planned at the end of last week to take this week off and not do any schoolwork with the kids, because I really wanted to get some major cleaning projects done in the house. Like, not tidying, cleaning things, but like, you know, those corners where things just get shoved and then eventually you have to kind of unshove everything.
Take everything out of a room and then, like, yeah, except for the major furniture pieces.
I really wanted to do the kids' rooms, and because I spent Monday at the RMV and then Tuesday I ended up having a doctor's appointment and then Wednesday I needed to go to the grocery store. And I know some people like, well, none of those was an all day thing. So why couldn't I spend the rest of my day doing my house cleaning projects? And I tried, but I don't know. I didn't really get into the flow. And so
it takes you time to get into that. I'm in the mode. I'm cleaning. I'm efficient. I'm in the flow. Like I get like that with work. Like it takes time to get into the flow. And when there are interruptions, it's hard to kind of do it.
And also, I think that there are two different kinds of people in the world. There are high energy people and low energy people. And I am definitely not a high energy person.
Yeah.
And so for me, doing like one big thing in a day, generally, like I can do the sort of regular maintenance stuff, you know, keeping on top of the laundry, cooking dinner, making sure the children are taken care of, making like the superficial tidying up that we do every day with the kids, you know, put away all the toys that you got out today. But I don't really seem to be able to do more than one big thing. And so if I go to the RMV doing another big thing, like
a doctor's office or the grocery store,
right. I don't know. I can't seem to do two things in one day.
I mean, you did get into the boys' room, which is a huge deal. I mean, the boys' room is has been a gigantic mess.
Yeah, I managed to clear out a lot of stuff in the closet.
You can actually make your way through the room to the closet.
And and I've bribed them a few times to pick up more stuff because they wanted to play on the iPad. And so they actually ended up, now that I've made a headway, they've actually made more additional progress.
Yes, using the iPad as a carrot to get them to do things. That's just, I don't know what people used to do before there were iPads they wanted to play. I mean, it was TV time or it was Xbox or whatever. So having something that you can use as a carrot to get them to do stuff is so much better. Now, see, compared to your week, mine was pretty quiet. I mean, quiet in the sense of I just had work. And so I just editing and that sort of stuff. So nothing major there. And then when, you know, on Friday on your birthday, you know, went with you were out. And then when you got back, I went out with the kids, most of them, to get your cake. And we'll talk about that in a second. But, you know, I don't know. There was nothing really all that exciting for me this week, which was good. But I just could get my work done. That was the big thing. One of these days, we're going to talk about in this, but we're not going to talk about today because it would take too long. We're going to talk about dealing with neighbor kids. We've talked a little bit about the kids down the street who want to be friends with our kids. And there's more to talk about there, but I guess we're not going to talk about it today. But if you have advice neighbor kids who want to be friends with your kids, and your kids aren't all that excited about it, and those kids are not necessarily the best behaved in the sense of they know how to be appropriate at like five, six, seven years old. I mean, they're pretty young. You know, I'd love to hear from you. Like, what do you do and what your experience is? We're going to talk about it a little more in upcoming weeks, but that's a little bit of a preview of coming attractions. So because it was your birthday, as far as on the food situation this week, we didn't have the beginning of the week. We had some pretty standard, you know, I grilled some stuff, nothing exciting. But for your birthday, we always do a birth. When it's someone's birthday, we go out, the birthday person picks a meal or a place and we go to it. And I thought you were going to pick, you often pick Sombreros, which is the really nice Mexican restaurant nearby, but you had a different choice this time. Let everyone know what your choice is.
I don't usually pick Sombreros. The kids pick Sombreros.
Rephrase. You let others pick where you were going to go. If your mom or your dad happen to be visiting on your birthday, then you and I go out for your birthday.
Right.
And we often go to sushi because that's the only time we can afford to go to sushi when it's just you and me. But you had a pick this time.
Right. So I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I mean, we tend to go to the same like half dozen places.
Everybody does that.
Right. Everyone does. And especially because we're kind of hampered by Lucy's food allergies. There's a lot of places that we can't go. And of course, then we're also hampered by budget constraints. But while I was down at the water, actually, I thought of another place that's also down by the water. And so I'm sitting there at the coffee shop and thinking, you know, Wahlburgers is not that far away, and I really like their burgers. Maybe I could just, you know, use a burger.
So you've probably heard of Wahlburgers. I'm just going to say to the listener. But if you haven't, so the family that Mark Wahlberg, Donnie Wahlberg, the Wahlberg family of actors who are from Boston, they have a brother, Paul, and Paul's a chef. And he opened a restaurant here in nearby in the town of Hingham, that Melody was in. And it's called Alma Nova, and it's named after the mom, and it's a fancy restaurant. And then across the street, it's in the old Hingham shipyard that's been turned into a combined mixed-use development. You know, that whole thing with shops and restaurants and expensive condos and that sort of thing. Anyway, they opened up a burger place across the street, which is a sort of a combination of fast food, but also sit down with waitresses.
Yeah, it's kind of an upscale burger joint.
Yeah, yeah. It's much more so than say like a Five Guys. I gotta say the burgers are really good.
They're really tasty.
They do a custom blend of, you know, their own grind of meat. They have sauces that they put on, and I mean it's a really good burger. And the nice thing is when we go, it's right next to the water, so you can walk around by the marina. But as far as the food goes, there's something for everyone. Everyone likes it, including Lucy.
Right. We just bring her own bun because they actually have a gluten-free bun, but
it's still got corn or wheat or something in it.
I can't guarantee that it's free from all of her allergens. So we just put one of her little buns. Actually, I can't find hamburger buns that she likes that she can eat, but there's a brand that makes an English muffin, which doesn't really look very English muffin-y.
It looks like a bun.
But it's about the right size for a hamburger bun, so I just slice those in half, and she likes them a lot.
I mean, that's the great thing. So, yeah, there's no corn, there's no wheat, there's no dairy, you know, the whole shebang for all of her allergies. And so we just shamelessly order a patty without bun, and they brought out a plate, and we shove it between the English muffin, and that's her thing. And she's happy.
Right. I mean, we end up sometimes, we try to order from restaurants, but then sometimes we have to supplement because they just don't have.
Like when we go to, what was it, Chili's, and they bring out the chips and salsa. Well, she loves the salsa. She can eat that.
She adores salsa, but she can't eat tortilla chips.
So we bring potato chips, our own potato chips, open a bag up, put it on the table, and that's what she eats. It looks funky. I know. It looks weird. I'm sure we get weird looks. Nobody's said anything yet. I'm waiting for the day for some manager to come over and tell us that we can't do that. But
I think that if we explained, though, that she's got food allergies and they simply do not have stuff that she can eat on their menu.
Yeah.
You know,
I think it'll be fine. But it's just, you know, it's an adventure taking her out places. And a lot of places it's grilled chicken.
Yeah, the poor thing, she ends up eating grilled chicken with broccoli a lot because that's what's on a lot of the kids' menus that she can eat.
Yes.
Gets very bored of grilled chicken. She's very excited when she can get like, ooh, steak.
Yeah, or salmon or, you know, some piece of fish or whatever.
And honestly, we end up often we end up paying more for her food, the six-year-olds who eats like a bird, than for any of the other kids.
Yeah, because we have to get a real meal for her. So it's just the way it is. It's the way it is. So we ate at Wahlburgers, and then afterward we went out and walked right across the street. There's a park on the water with the marina. So all these beautiful boats right there. And there's a ferry that is the commuter ferry that goes into Boston. And they have on Fridays in the summer, they have a concert series. And so they had like a Beatles tribute band or something. That was there. And it was fun. It was nice. It was a nice little walking around and a lot of people watching. And there was a family that was of smaller kids than us. So two or three of them, I think three, obviously going out to the boat for the weekend and watching them maneuver all these kids and all their gear down the very steep ramp to the pier and, you know, going out on the wharf to the pier.
At one point, the dad went back to the car to, like, I don't know, park the car maybe or get stuff.
Get more stuff.
And so the mom's down on the pier with three kids, one of whom looked to be about two. And the little two-year-old, the mom is going back and forth getting the
two carts full of stuff.
Big wheelbarrows, basically, full of their stuff. And the little two-year-old's following her up and down the pier, dragging one of those little roll suitcases and crying, just sobbing and sobbing. It was really endearing.
They had all the kids in flotation vests and helmets, which I got to hand to them. Yeah, you got to do that because one of them's got to fall in and you just got to be paranoid about it.
And they even, like, as they were coming down the ramp, they had a little mishap where
a pillow fell off the cart, and everyone looking on from the walkway up above, where everyone went, oh, because we all thought it was going to go in the water. It didn't. It landed on the pier.
It missed going into the water by inches, though.
It did. Oh, someone would have had a wet pillow for the weekend. Hey, if you've got a boat to spend the weekend on, I got it. Power to you. That would be awesome. I'd love to do that. Just take the boat out. Nice. On a Friday night, come back Sunday morning or something. That'd be nice. Anyway, so that was what we had on Friday night. And then Saturday, it's the beginning of August. This is prime lobster eating time in New England. This is when the lobsters are at their best. After the heat of the summer, they shed a couple months ago. Their shells are firming up. This is the everyone agrees this is the best tasting lobster of the summer. And so I said, I want lobster this weekend. Plus, I'd watched that a video from the guys on YouTube, the Sorted guys, these British friends who have a cooking channel. And they were in Portland, Maine, trying lobster rolls. And I'm like, oh, I've got to have lobster.
So we got our lobster at the farmer's market where we go most Saturdays in the summer and fall.
Yeah. In spring.
So the actual fishermen come to the farmer's market and set up a stand and sell fish that was just caught the day before.
In this case, it's the lobsterman's daughter. She's actually, her mom used to do it. Now she does it every weekend. And yeah, she said these came out of the trap yesterday, so they're fresh as can be. And they were, you know, and they're not the cheapest I've seen lobster at the market. I've seen them as low as $4.99 a pound a few years ago. I'm like, I'm going to eat all the lobster at $4.99 a pound.
But yeah, I think that summer we had tons.
We had a lot of lobster that summer. But these were $6.99 a pound, which is a pretty good price. For those of you who are from elsewhere, take a look at the lobster prices next time you go in the supermarket and what you're paying for in the supermarket for not so fresh lobster. So this is a good deal. And so I picked up a handful, five of them, and brought them home, cook them up. Kids like to play with them first before we put them in the water. What we do is we put them up, put it on the floor, one of them on the floor, and they look at it, they pick it up. They know how to tell whether it's a boy or a girl.
It's nature study with your food.
It's homeschool nature study. And then it's in the pot, you go.
Isabella actually knows how to tell the sex of the lobsters. Yes. She's figured that out. She'll say, oh, look, it's a female. Oh, look, it's a male.
It's pretty easy. So they have a on the underside at the top of the tail, along the inside of the tail are the swimmerettes, these little swimmers things that can paddle back and forth. At the very top, there's the very top two swimmerettes. They're either hard shell like or soft. If they're soft, it's a female. If they're hard, it's a male. And that's how you tell. Some people prefer not to get female lobsters because they have the egg sacs. It doesn't bother me either way. So, but I know my sister doesn't like them. So
because they don't like the taste or the idea of eating.
I think she doesn't like the taste or texture of the egg sac or something. It doesn't bother me at all. In fact, I like the whole thing. Obviously. This time I shelled them all before dinner. And I think that actually worked out better. Like in the past, I was like, here's your lobster. Boom, right on the table. Go right at it and shell it yourself. And then I spend the whole meal doing it for them and not eating my own meal. So this time I shelled everything, got all the meat out first. That worked out good. And then here's a trick. All that water you boiled the lobsters in has got lobster flavor. So simmer it down some to, you know, like a couple quarts. and then put it in the freezer. And the next time you make a fish soup or stew or chowder, use that instead of water. That's going to add some flavor. Anyway, so that's my lobster stock tip of the week. So that's what we've been eating. So we can talk about what we've been watching and reading, which, so you, let's start with you, because your list is a little shorter than mine.
I'm just kind of finishing up stuff that I've already started mostly. I discovered in conversation this week that with some friends that I had somehow missed an entire book of short stories that's from the Dresden Files universe. Dresden Files, in case you don't know about it, is a private investigator, like hard-boiled detective fiction, except that the main character is a wizard. It's set in Chicago and kind of a fantasy, urban fantasy. It's fun. And
was it a TV show?
They did make like a one season TV show from it, yeah, which had some serious departures from the series, and fans are kind of divided as to whether they like it or not.
Oh, Paul Blackthorne was Gary Dresden. OK.
Yeah, I saw a couple episodes. It was OK.
But the books are really, you like the books, right?
I love the books. Now, they're definitely not for the squeamish. There's lots of violence. There's lots of adult content.
Vampires and monsters. And
there's vampires and monsters and werewolves and like fairies. And
this isn't Harry Potter.
Actually, I have to say, I like Harry Dresden a lot better than Harry Potter. But all the Harry Potter fans can hate me now. I really like it's a morally complex universe. And what I really like is Harry Dresden sort of he's a hero, but he's also kind of an anti-hero in his own mind. He doesn't think he's worthwhile, but he's got this best friend, Michael, who is a devout Catholic. And Michael wields one of three magic swords that were made with nails from the True Cross. And so he is a holy warrior who fights spiritual battles with Harry. And his sword has sort of magical powers that come from God. And there's always this nice moral conflict, where Michael is always trying to get Harry to lay down his magic and get right with God. And Harry's like, but if I lay down my magic, then all of the bad guys win and Chicago will be completely overrun with monsters. And I'm the only thing standing between all these innocent people and the monsters. So I have to keep fighting the good fight. And so there's this like moral tension that runs through the series. And I like that a lot.
Hmm.
Sometimes you get angelic beings who appear in addition to all the demons and the scary things. Actual angels appear and talk to Harry sometimes and kind of try to nudge him onto the right path. And Harry generally doesn't do too badly, but he's definitely sometimes kind of a little bit lost.
It looks like they're trying to reboot it again. Another shot at turning it into a TV show. So interesting. I mean, it sounds like the sort of thing that would make that they would want for a TV show.
Yeah. I mean, if you had some like really good special effects, you could do some really fun things. There's, there's one of the books where, Harry ends up writing Sue, the Tyrannosaurus Rex from the Natural History Museum. She kind of comes to life and, he rides her through Chicago fighting bad guys. It's fun.
That sounds crazy. That
I would love to see that on the big screen.
And so someone let you know that there was another book of short stories from the series that you hadn't read.
Yeah. Like we were talking about the series and I had read one book of short stories. There's two collections of short stories as well as 13 novels now. He's working, I think, on number 14. And I said, oh, wait, I haven't read that collection. So it was like, ooh. Christmas, I get to check it out from the library, put it on my Kindle, and could go.
Interesting. Yep. And then what did you watch? You said you rewatched something.
Yeah, yeah. I really like the TV series Bones, about a forensic anthropologist who looks at dead bodies, specifically the bones, and solves crimes. It's a police procedural, basically. The main character is Temperance Brennan. And she's got a partner who's an FBI agent by the name of Booth. And he's a devout Catholic. So actually another really interesting dynamic. They're kind of like Mulder and Scully, except if you reverse the roles, where she's the skeptic atheist and he's the devout Catholic. Although he's kind of skeptical about her science and she's skeptical about his faith. There's a fun dynamic between the two characters. Anyway, I had taken a hiatus from watching my way through the series, but I lost my place and I can't remember which season I'm in or which shows I've seen in Amazon. Like, I guess I stepped away for too long and it had lost. Like, usually it remembers, like, play, it picks up and says, play the last one. But if you wait too long, I suppose it.
That's annoying.
It doesn't remember. So I ended up like it. I clicked on it and it started auto playing episode one of season one. And I thought, you know, it might be kind of fun to watch like the first episode again. Now, having seen like maybe I think I'm like 8 or 9 seasons in. And so I watched the first two episodes. It was fun to see the sort of beginnings when there's still a lot of tension and there's a lot more establishing the characters.
You know, that happened to me with the Americans, the series, where it lost my place and I was not going to go back to the beginning and I kind of had to jump around a bit. But then you're afraid of getting spoiled by watching the wrong one out of order.
Right, right. You don't want to see actually I did that previously with Bones. I jumped ahead 2 seasons and it spoiled a bunch of the mm-hmm. plot lines, the relationship plot lines.
You're sitting there for the first time is going, I don't remember any of
this.
Wait,
who is this intern and who is that intern? And I don't remember that character. And whoa, oh, hold on.
That happened the other night. I'm like, what's going on in this episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Oh, wait a minute. I've missed one. I'm like, stop. Everything stop. I hate spoilers. All right. So what I watched a couple movies this week. I actually watched a movie and the first episode of a TV show. So the movie I watched was on Netflix, and I guess it's not a new movie. It came out in 2018, but it was showing to me for the first time, called Mission of Honor. And it's based on a true story, so take that for what it will, about Polish pilots in World War II who, after Poland fell, they went to France and flew for France. And after France fell, they crossed the English Channel and flew for the RAF in the Battle of Britain. This is like 1940, I think it is, to holding back the British. The Germans. The Germans thought that they were going to defeat the Brits and be invading England by, you know, within 3-4 months. That's how close it had all gotten. And they were all shunted into this one squadron, the 303, and they ended up having the best record, the best kill record of any squadron in the RAF in World War II. They were that good, and partly because of their motivation. So it was heavily fictionalized. I get that. A lot of the characters were composites or sort of idealized versions of the character of the real people. They weren't. There were a lot more of the Polish pilots than they showed. There were like 14 or a dozen of them on screen. In reality, there was many, many more of them. It was good. Some of it was a little hard to buy, but there was one of the pilots was a young man who was of deep faith. Some of them were kind of, shall we say, like military men of many eras who are looking to spend their downtime partaking of vices.
Uh-huh.
But this guy was a man of faith, and he set up a little church. Because they're in England, so there wasn't like a Catholic church nearby. So he set up a little, in an abandoned little hut, he set up a little chapel for himself and the other guys, and ended up creating an altar and a place to pray for all of the guys who died from their squadron.
Hmm.
And in fact, at one point, they shot down this bomber, and a German bomber, and they drive to where it is, because one of the guys wants to get a souvenir off of the plane. And he sees the bodies of the German pilots and he's praying for them. And this other guy comes over and starts, we don't pray for them. They're not human. They're the enemy. They're not Germans. They're not worthy of your prayers. And he's undeterred. I mean, he's sort of shaken up by it. He's, you know, he's, but he's very quiet. But you know, so the prayer life, the fact that these Polish guys were Catholic is not ignored. So it was all right. It wasn't a great movie, but it was pretty good. One of the interesting things was this one character is this Canadian who was serving in the RAF, who had been made the executive officer of the squadron, who was, I look at this guy, I'm going, I know this guy. I've seen him in something before. He's very familiar to me. And then at the end of the movie, as they're doing the credits, I see the name roll up, Milo Gibson. I'm like, Milo Gibson? That can't be. Sure enough, yeah, it's Mel Gibson's son is this actor. Who he was also apparently in not Heartbreak Ridge, the one that Mel Gibson did with the guy from Silence, Andrew Garfield.
No idea.
True story, another World War II movie, true story, something Ridge, can't remember now. Won Oscars. It was a really great movie. That was an awesome movie. But he was in that too. So Milo Gibson, I thought it was kind of fascinating by Mel Gibson's son. I'm like, I guess he's got a son who's old enough. I mean, this guy doesn't look young. He's, you know, early 30s, I think. He's old enough. So interesting. The other thing I watched is something I'm not going to recommend.
Okay.
Right off the bat, I'm not going to make that mistake again. It's called The Boys on Amazon Prime, heavily promoted by Amazon. And so I watched the first episode. It's a superhero show, but it's very gritty and very explicit and very there's some gore in it, in fact. But it sort of takes this realism approach to superheroes. This idea of if they're really it kind of reminds me of the Wearing the Cape series of books that I really enjoy that you've read, where it sort of takes this realistic approach. If they were superheroes, well, they would probably have. Licensing deals for their images, and there'd be movies that they would be made about them in TV shows and merchandise, and they'd have to, how would our laws adapt to superheroes, and how would our society have to deal with it, including things like liability, you know, right. When a superhero accidentally, you know, does something damaging to a bystander, how do they handle liability? And so that's actually a very big part of at least this first episode. I don't want to spoil it in case you do want to watch it. I won't spoil it because it occurs very early on and it's very shocking what happens. I mean, it really shocked me. And that was in a good way. But the problem is they go in, it's like a lot of these streaming shows where they'd say, hey, there are no holds barred. We can do whatever we want. We can be pretty much as explicit as we want to be. And they really kind of, it's really R-rated. It's not, it's certainly not appropriate for kids and not really appropriate for most people. But I just thought I'd mention it because the idea is interesting. I like the idea of taking that realistic approach to superheroes. So it's called The Boys on Amazon Prime, but I can't recommend it. So, all right. So that's what we've been watching. And I did finish a book. Another book called The Bayern Agenda, which was fun. It was a science fiction book that is a spy thriller.
Okay.
So imagine, you know, we had the Cold War between, you know, the Soviet Union and Russia and the U.S. and the Soviet Union is Russia. And spies who have to, you know, go back and forth and spy on the other country. But instead of the U.S. and the Soviet Union, it's 400 years in the future, and it's these two different planetary unions, sort of. But it's still a spy novel. It's good. The author is Dan Morin, who is, if you listen to a lot of podcasts, you might know him from the Incomparable series of podcasts. He's on that a lot. And he's also been a writer for various Mac publications, which is how I first heard about him. And he's become a novelist. And so this is his second novel, which is it's good. I can recommend it. I won't say too much more than that, but just it was what I read. All right. So let's move on to our faith topic of the week. There was a news story that you saw first. It was an ESPN story.
And I don't usually read ESPN, but several of my friends shared it. So it caught my eye.
So it was about ESPN is the first thing. And it's a story about a woman who was one of the top college basketball stars like 30 years ago, who became a poor Claire nun. And when you become a poor Claire, these are hardcore cloistered sisters. She, like, they go in, they don't come out. They live a very austere life away from the world. And she went from being one of, like, she would have been the highest paid female basketball player in the world at the time. This is before the WNBA. And she was playing in Japan because that's where women could play and get paid, to joining the poor Claires.
Yeah, it was a really good story. It was a long form article with interviews with her friends and her family.
And a video that they did, like a documentary video.
I didn't actually watch the video, so I missed that part. I don't tend to click on videos.
Yeah, well, the kids will come running. So it was very interesting. So, like, the frame is, they go in, when they enter, the poor Claires enter, they go in, they're behind a screen, and it's the only way that family can see them in when that's possible even, is through the screen. But every 25 years, on their 25th anniversary of their vows, they open this door, sort of like a Dutch door, and their family and friends can hug them.
Yeah.
Once. And so the story is that every year, once a year, that her coach from Villanova, that's where she went to school, drives from Villanova to, it's Arlington, Virginia. To Arlington, Virginia. So Villanova's in Philadelphia, drives to Virginia to Mass there to see her. And for him, it's like, he says it's a pilgrimage.
And he brings a carload of food and other supplies for the nuns.
Poor Claire's are hard, like I said, hardcore. They sleep on straw mats. They don't wear shoes except when they spend like an hour a day out in the courtyard. Like they get up at 12:30 every morning to pray. They don't sleep more than 4 hours at a time. I mean, this is the serious hardcore life.
Yeah.
And the video was very affecting, I have to tell you, because they didn't interview her mom, but her mom was there at the Mass, and her mom is elderly. Like, her mom, this Mass was going to be the last time her mother would get to hug her daughter, probably, in this life.
Well, she said that I think she would be 104 at the next
next opportunity, yeah.
And so the mom actually said in the article that she was holding out for 104.
Yeah.
and all of the kids were like, yeah, she might do it.
we can hope.
But her father died before.
Right.
So her mom was a widow.
And so this is in ESPN, which I thought was amazing that they're doing this. And there's a quote from the article by the reporter. She writes, "The poor Claire nuns enter this radical way of life because they believe that their prayers for humanity will help the suffering, and that their sacrifice will lead to the salvation of the world. But why would someone with so much to offer the world lock herself away and hide her talents?" And I just had to laugh at it because why? Because this is better. But one of the things is I felt like this was serendipitous or the Holy Spirit, because the answer to that is in Sunday's today. Today we're recording this on Sunday. It's this Sunday's gospel reading. And it's about the man who stores up treasures on earth and then dies, and God calls him the fool.
You fool!
You rich fool. But at the end, the very end of the gospel, it says, "Thus will it be for all who store up treasure for themselves, but are not rich in what matters to God." That's Luke 12:21. And as I'm reading this article, I'm thinking to myself, Sister Rosemarie is rich in what matters to God. That's the answer to this reporter's question. Why would you lock yourself away? You have so much to offer the world, because what she has now is so much better. It looks like, as St. Paul says, it's foolishness to the world. The wisdom of God is foolishness to the world. And that's what it looks like. It looks like foolishness, but it's wisdom. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard if you don't believe in the power of prayer, that it's real and that it affects real change. It's hard to see that these sisters in their cloister are probably doing more to change the world than, you know, a lot of missionaries out in the field, or the missionaries themselves wouldn't be effective without the prayers of the sisters. It's interesting to me that, like, for example, St. Dominic before he founded the Order of Preachers, first founded a community of cloistered nuns to pray for the eventual preachers who he was going to found, because he knew that the preachers, in order to go out and convert the heathens, the heretics, needed the prayers of the cloistered nuns. That's the powerhouse from which they get their energy to do the work.
The patron saint of missionaries is a cloistered nun.
Saint Therese.
Saint Therese of Lisieux. They are the spiritual battery for missionaries in that sense. They, if it weren't for all of these cloistered nuns and brothers around the world, these monks and nuns around the world cloistered, we would not have the graces we have in the church. The graces that pour through these places, we just don't realize. We will not realize their true measure until the next life. I mean, this is so. I love this story. I love that it's a witness to the world. So, and we talked about it a little bit at dinner tonight with the kids,
and
about the idea of vocation.
And in a secular journal like ESPN, which I thought did a really good job of reporting what it is that Catholics believe.
I have to say that whenever I read ESPN's long form articles that address the topics of faith, they actually do in general, a pretty good job, better than most mainstream media does. I have to say, for whatever reason, the sports reporters do a better job. I don't know what it is. Maybe because sports reporters are praying a lot when they're watching the games or something. But
interesting.
Yeah. The sports pages usually have better faith reporting than the rest of the papers, put it that way, too. So I want to finish up with a couple of bits of feedback.
Okay.
We love getting feedback. We love getting
feedback
from our listeners. So the first bit of feedback comes from Jason Thayer on Facebook. First, he pointed out how the sound in last week's episode was all over the place. And yes, mea culpa. Then he said, he asked Melanie, have you ever seen the Studio Ghibli, I don't know how to pronounce it, movie based on Howl's Moving Castle? You mentioned reading the books.
I actually haven't, although a bunch of my friends are huge fans of all of that particular movie and all of the Studio Ghibli work. I haven't actually seen any of them. I have to say that in general, my tastes don't run to that style of animation.
Yeah, I'm not an anime fan myself.
I'm not really a fan. And so it just hasn't been something that's like called to me. One of these days, I probably will watch it, though, because it's been highly recommended by lots of people. Although my friends who've seen it and love it say that the movie really isn't very much like the.
Yeah, I'm looking at the poster art in it. It's kind of wild. It's very anime. So interesting. Thank you, Jason. We'll have to put it on the list. And then we have some email we got from Hannah Svoboda. And Hannah took issue with my review of the HBO miniseries Chernobyl. And Hannah is a nuclear engineer. And so I'll give her props for that. And she talks about being frustrated by the dramatizations of the miniseries because they have so much misinformation in them. And I will stipulate, like I did with the Mission of Honor movie that I just talked about. Based on a true story, whenever you see a movie based on history or a true story, you have to recognize that it is not going to be history. Exactly. It is going to be some version of it, and things will have been changed, and it won't be completely accurate. So she's right like that. She takes me to task for one bit about saying that, what did she say, she took me to task particularly for saying that it would explode like a bomb, like a nuclear bomb. I don't think I actually said that particularly. She said, you mentioned the plant would explode and render Eastern Europe uninhabitable. So the movie claims that if the building collapsed, it would send a cloud of radioactive dust into the air that would render Eastern Europe uninhabitable. I don't think I ever said it was would explode like a bomb. If I did, that was a misstatement. I didn't mean to say, I shouldn't have said that. But I mean, even the I watched a documentary in Nova, PBS Nova documentary, where they talked about building this new covering, this massive, largest building ever built that could move, that they built and then moved over the reactor building that they had to do because that building is decaying from all the radiation and will eventually collapse in on itself. So this building would contain that because if it did, it would send a giant dust cloud, radioactive dust cloud up that would irradiate a very large section of that area and would, you know, kill people. She, you know, she linked to an article about the science that it gets wrong. And yeah, I mean, I knew going in, there's a scene where a helicopter flies through the radioactive smoke coming up from the fire that's burning in the reactor. And it doesn't exactly melt. People claim that it melts on screen. It doesn't melt. It just, but it does crash. And that wouldn't actually happen. It wouldn't cause the radiation wouldn't cause a crash, nor is radiation sickness contagious. You won't get, like, if someone has been irradiated and is dying from it, you won't get radiation sickness from them, from touching them or hugging them. That's not true either. And the show did kind of say that. And there are other things about did as many people really get sick as they say they did and all this other stuff. I mean, but I'm of the opinion that when it's based on a true story, they're trying to convey a sense of the potential disaster that it was, in a way that fits in a dramatic narrative.
You have to take everything with a grain of salt.
Right.
And it's true that, like, the more you know, the harder it is to suspend your disbelief when you see a movie.
Every time I see anything about the Catholic Church in TV or movies, I'm the same way.
Right. And that's one reason why I think I have a hard time a lot of times with movies that are made from books that I love, because I just notice, like, a sore thumb, everything that they get wrong.
The Hobbit.
That they change. Oh, I watched the first episode. I went to the theater with you for the very first part of the 3-part The Hobbit movie. And after that, I did not want to see any more.
But you didn't like you weren't looking forward to the hobbits riding the being pulled by war goats.
No, it's so wrong.
And the albino
and even like goblin. the Peter Jackson's Lord of the Ring movies. Like, I watched them when they came out. I watched them in the theater, and I think I watched them on DVD after the DVDs came out. But I'm not sure I really am interested in seeing them again. Like, I just read the Lord of the Rings to the kids a couple years ago. And I don't know, I love the book so much, and the movies are okay, but they don't.
They're different forms of art.
Right. But it's not the books that I love. It's something different. And
I love them for what they are.
I have a hard time seeing books that I loved being changed into movie
form. Well, I love the books, and I really like the movies, but I love them differently.
Yeah.
Because I know I can separate the different forms of art that they are.
And I think partly it's just because I am such a literary critic, a literary scholar. I mean, I've been trained to read carefully and to pay attention to the details. And so maybe those just stick out for me more, and the changes between the two are more glaring. I don't know.
Well, I think it's the same reason some people do not want to see The Passion of the Christ.
Right.
Because it would create an image of what happened in their mind that they could not afterwards separate from the reality of how they pray.
And I respect that a lot.
I do too. Yeah.
We saw it together, actually, in the theater. When
we were dating.
Out. Right. One of our first dates.
Date movie.
with your sister and her husband.
Yes.
It was a double date. And I've seen it on DVD, I think, once or twice since then. But that's another one of, I'm not sure that I want to see it again, at least not anytime soon.
That's one where I don't want to see it too much, because I don't want it to lose the impact. I don't want it to become kind of blasé about it.
Yeah, there's lots of reasons, but I'm kind of hesitant to see it again.
Okay. Well, thank you for the feedback, Hannah, the constructive criticism. I appreciate that. Again, I agree, you have to be a critical viewer and reader of things you can't just take things at face value just because they say it in movies. That just like with CSI, they don't do DNA in 20, 30 mm-hmm. minutes. That's, I mean, these sorts of things. In fact, just to actually kind of make the point, police and prosecutors have said that these cop shows have created problems for their trials of criminals because jurors are sitting there going, well, why didn't you just run the DNA, you know, right. in 30 minutes?
In fact, to go back to Bones, which I was talking about earlier, mm-hmm. my science friends, like my friend Rebecca, she really loves the show, but sometimes she says, just like screaming at the TV, that's not how that works.
Yes, she's a scientist,
right?
Yeah, or the fingerprints are the best one because it's like every show they take a fingerprint and they put it in the computer and then it makes a match because that's how it works, right?
Right.
No,
amazing magic.
That doesn't happen. There is no system where it looks at a fingerprint and makes a match with something else in the system. It is still a manual process. It's so very funny. Very funny. All right, enough of that. So, Hannah and Jason, thank you for your feedback. I really do appreciate it. So, I think we should wrap it up here.
Okay.
We've gone on for about an hour, so that's a good length of time. So, what did you think of our discussion? Any things we had to say? We'd love to hear from you and get your feedback. Have you seen any of the things we've seen or read anything we read? If you've got that advice for us on how to deal with neighbor kids that maybe we don't want to deal with, you know, we'd love to hear your experiences anyway, even if you don't have a solution. You can reach us by visiting sqpn.com/bets, that's BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or you can send us an email to bets, BETTS, at sqpn.com. And we'll put any relevant links from our discussion on our show notes at sqpn.com. Please remember to like Raising the Bets on our Facebook page or retweet us on Twitter where we're at sqpn and leave comments there. By liking it and retweeting it and leaving comments, you juice the algorithm. You get it going so that it will actually show it to people who want to see it. Hi, I've liked your page. but I don't see your content. That's because enough people aren't commenting or liking, and therefore Facebook thinks nobody wants to see it. So if you could do that for us, we really do appreciate that. Yes. Until next time, then, I'm Dom Bethanelli.
And I'm Melanie Bethanelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.